Let's open our Bibles, if you will, to Psalms number, or Proverbs chapter 3. We've been studying from this proverb, and believe it or not, I did not plan to have as many lessons on this. I was kind of thinking that it would just be one or two, and yet it seems to have developed into more than what I had originally planned. Hopefully, you've been getting some good things from it. In Proverbs 3, the wise man encourages his son to trust in the Lord with all of his heart. He encourages his son in all your ways to acknowledge him. And then he goes on to encourage his son not to be wise in your own eyes, but to fear the Lord and turn away from evil. And he says that when he does this, he will have spiritual wholeness. When he does this, he says it will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. And this is what spiritual wholeness is all about. It is when we serve God, there will be a joy in this, and there will be a refreshment in this. And this is what he encourages his son to do, to trust in God, to not lean on your own understanding, to acknowledge him in all your ways, and all these things will be added to you. In the verses that follow this admonition to trust in God, then the father goes on and talks to his son about ways in which this trust will be manifested. And really, the last four verses of this section deal with two ways in particular. It deals with honoring God from wealth and also not despising the chastening or the discipline of the Lord. We won't talk about that today. We'll talk about that in another lesson. But today I want to talk to you about honoring the Lord from your wealth. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, it said, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. Before God gave the law to Moses, the men of God were accustomed to give a tithe. A tithe is actually a tenth of all things. And we learned before the law that God gave Abraham gave Melchizedek a tithe after he had conquered the kings. The kings that we're talking about here were the kings that had taken Lot and his family and all the Sodom and Gomorrah area into captivity. And Abraham went down there to rescue his nephew Lot, but in so doing he rescues everybody else. And when he comes back from this defeat of all these kings, he meets Melchizedek, who is a priest of God, and who, by the way, was a Canaanite, yet a man who feared God, a man who apparently had a relationship with God. And he gives Melchizedek a tenth of the spoils. And so we learn before the law that tithing, giving a tenth of your wealth, of your prosperity, was something that was known to the men of God. Also, when Jacob was fleeing from his brother Esau, as we see on the board, that Jacob made a vow to God when he was resting on the stone that evening. And he says to God, God, if you bring me back to this land, if you bring me back to my father's house, I will give you a tenth of all that I have. And that is what a tithe is. It is a tenth of all that you have earned. It is a tenth of your gross, if you will, and not of all that you've earned. It's not of the net. It is from the very top you give that to the Lord. And that is what a tithe was. But it wasn't until God gave the law that he codified tithing. And we see some verses of his that we're going to look at in a few minutes, not thoroughly, but these are verses here, Leviticus 27, Numbers 18, Deuteronomy 12, and Deuteronomy 14. And there are a lot of other verses that one could turn to where tithing was dealt with, but we're going to look at that and kind of get an overall view of what God taught about tithing, at least under the law. But before we give a summary of these verses, it would do us well to understand what God revealed to Israel about her wealth. Israel would be a wealthy nation. Israel would be a prosperous nation. And I want us to turn, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 8, because in this verses here, we see God giving some instruction to Israel about her wealth and about her attitude toward her wealth. And in Deuteronomy 8, beginning in verse 12, verse 11, God says to Israel, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God, by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes which I command you to this day. The first warning here is don't forget God. I found this interesting when I was reading this and kind of preparing for this lesson, that the way in which they were to remember the Lord their God was by keeping His commandments. You know, very often people say, well, I know God, and I remember God, and I'm familiar with God, but I don't really care to do what God says. Notice here in this text here that the way that they were to remember the Lord was by keeping His commandments, by keeping His ordinances. And the way they forgot God was by not keeping His ordinances. So that this keeping the commandment of God, the keeping of these ordinances was the way in which they would remember God. And God says, remember me, keep these commandments, keep these ordinances. And look what would happen when they stopped doing this. Look what would happen whenever they forgot God. We see this revealed in verse 12. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied, and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply, and your silver and gold multiply, and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of a rock flint. In the wilderness He fed you manna which your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and that He might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and my strength my hand has given me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to make wealth, that He may confirm His covenant which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Here God tells them to remember, and He says, if you don't remember, this is what will happen. When you get into the land and you start prospering, you'll begin to think, I made myself wealthy. I made myself this great nation that I now am. And keeping the law would help them remember that that wasn't the case at all. Keeping the law would help them to remember that they owed their wealth, that they owed their prosperity to God. He was the giver of wealth. He was the one who gave them all these wonderful things, this food and this land and all these other things. And so God wanted them to remember this so they would not be raised up and think that by my own hand I am rich. By my own hand, I am powerful. You see, that's what God wanted them to remember. He was the one who was their wealth. He was the one who gave them this wonderful prosperity. But the people of God did not remember. The people of God left thinking, left the ordinances of God. They stopped obeying the commandments, and they started following after their own lust, their own desires, and as a result, they forgot God. And I want us to turn to Hosea, because during the time of Hosea, the nation by this time had been divided into the northern and the southern kingdoms, and Hosea was a prophet to the north, a prophet in Samaria. And what happened is that this prophet was sent, and this nation was wealthy, this nation was rich, and God sent Hosea. And He says to her in Hosea chapter 2, in verse 8, these words, for she does not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil, and lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for Baal. God had made them rich. God had given them the gold. God had given them the silver. God had given them the grain. But instead of honoring Him with all these things, they were honoring Baal, the false god, the god of the Philistines, the god of the Canaanites. They had forgotten who was their wealth giver. They had forgotten that it was God who had provided them with all these things. They had left the law. And that's what happened. And this wasn't the only time this happened. This happened continually. Finally, when we come to Ezekiel, we see a similar statement being made. In Ezekiel chapter 16, we see Ezekiel writing from captivity, writing from Babylon, and kind of going over why we were here. Why are we here in Babylon? Why are we suffering so? And Ezekiel reminds the children of Israel what had taken place prior to this. Beginning in verse 17, and this was only a part of it, but this is surely a big part. God says through Ezekiel, you also took the beautiful jewels made of my gold and of my silver, which I gave you, and made for yourselves male images that you might play the harlot with them. Then you took your embroidered cloth and covered them and offered my oil and my incense before them. Also my bread which I gave you, fine flour, oil, and honey which I fed you, you would offer before them for a soothing aroma. So it happened, declares the Lord God. Moreover, you took your sons and daughters whom you had borne to me and sacrificed them to idols to be devoured. Were your harlotries so small a matter? Here God reveals to Israel her problem. God had enriched the nation. God had blessed the nation in so many ways. And what have they done with their wealth? Well, they have forgotten that God had given it to them. And they turned to other gods, and they gave what God had given to them to these other gods. The silver, the gold, the grain, the children. All blessings from God. But they had forgotten the law. They had forgotten that it was God who gave them these things. You see, God wanted the people of Israel to know, I am your blesser. I'm the one who has given you all these things. I'm the one who has provided you with all these nice things. God was the giver of all blessings, and they had forgotten. Now, I want to bring this out because it's important for us to realize something about tithing under the Old Testament. And that is, when God commanded Israel to give a tithe, keep in mind that He was the giver of the gifts in the first place. And so in giving the tithe, all they were doing was returning to God what He had already given to them. And they were only returning a small portion, a tenth. Now that's really a big portion in the mind of worldly-minded people. I mean, and that's going to be the problem. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's important to realize that when God commanded Israel to give her tithes, that it was not because God needed this. Turn if you will to Acts. Because even though Paul here was speaking to the pagans, the Gentiles, what he said to them with regards to their things also is true with regard to the Israelites and their gifts. He says in verse 24, "The God who made the heaven, the world, and all things in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, neither is He served by human hands as though He needed anything, since He is the giver of all life and breath and all things." God does not serve by these things as though He needs it. The pagan gods needed this to live. It was to sustain their lives. But God said, I'm not served like that. You know, Nietzsche and some of these ancient, or some of these philosophers of the years gone by. God is dead. And if we just stop thinking about Him, He'll go away. And that was true with regard to Zeus and Jupiter and Diana, and that was true with regard to Mercury and all these other gods, and we could go on, and some of you don't know who they are anyway, and they've stopped existing. But Jehovah God will exist whether men remember Him or not. He is not served as though He needs anything from us. And so when God demanded a tithe from Israel, when He said, give me a tithe, a tenth, it was not as though He needed anything. It was really an act of teaching them to trust in Him to take care of them. We'll see more about this in just a moment, I think. God commanded tithing. He codified it in the law. He put it in the law for all to read. But before that, there was tithing, at least among some of the people. So they understood something about it. And I want again to stress that it was giving a tenth. That's what a tithe is, a tenth of all that one has. Well, let's look at some of these other things. This is a summary of some of the things that the Scriptures teach about tithing. Under the law, God commanded Israel to give a tithe of the crops that grew out of their fields, of the fruit of the trees, of the herd and the flocks. And under the law, with regard to the crops and the fruit trees, they would have to give the best of these crops. When it came to the herd, it was interesting. If you study these verses in Leviticus 27 and others, what they would do, they would have the herd go before one of the priests in order. And every tenth animal they took out, whether it was good or bad. And under the law, you know, you may lose your best stud to the priest. But that's what God said. You just let it go through and every tenth one is mine. But every year they have to do that. To give a tenth of their crops, whether it be from the trees, whether it be from the ground, and from their herds, or their sheep, their flocks as well. But there's more than that. The first tithe that they gave, and there were several tithes in the year, but it all ended up being a tithe, a tenth of everything. The first tithe was given to the Levites. And if you read Numbers 18, and again, Tom will not allow us to read all these, but in Numbers 18, this tithe was given to the Levites as payment. You see, under the law, the Levites didn't have any inheritance. They had no land. They had no inheritance in the land of Israel. So how are they going to live? And so God said, this is how they're going to live. You all are going to give them a tenth. And this was the first tithe. This was a first tithe of the year. And this was a sign of the Levites. And what's interesting is that the Levites then were commanded to tithe what they got. A tithe of the tithe. And they would give this, of course, to the high priest. To the priest that year. But furthermore, we learned that, let me go back here. I think that's it. Yeah, that was the first tithe. Now, this was the first tithe that was assigned to the Levites. Then we have a second tithe. And this second tithe was prepared and eaten in Jerusalem by the family and by the household and the servants and the Levites. And we read about that in Deuteronomy 12. And they were to take this tithe for at least twice every 3 years to Jerusalem, where they would share it with the Levites and they would rejoice before God. I think at this time the tithe was all only from the fruit of the ground. It wasn't from the flock. It was just the fruit, the vegetables and the fruit trees. And they would go there and eat this before the Lord in Jerusalem. Except for the third year. And the third year what they would do is that they would store this tithe in their own towns. And guess who they would store it for? The poor. This was the way God took care of the poor and the strangers who happened to be in the town and happened to have no work and no means to take care of themselves. Now, the other 2 years, they would perhaps the poor would benefit from this too, but this third tithe was the means by which God would take care of the poor. And this would be left in these storehouses and it would be distributed by the Levites, I believe. But you know, when you think about these tithes, and you think about what God would have them do, this would actually require a certain amount of trust on their part. And especially this last tithe, you know, when you say, well, you generally, every 2 years I get to eat this food. You know, I'm benefiting from this. But then this third year, especially when I have to give my food to the stores, and I really wouldn't have any right to eat it myself, there would be a tendency on the part of some, perhaps, to cheat. I remember years ago when I was in Ireland, I heard about a communal thing going on in India where all the farmers had agreed to donate a tenth of their milk to the town for the poor. And they had this big place of keeping this milk. And one day the government decided to do some tests on this milk and decided that about 80% of it was water. The people didn't want to give all this milk. They wanted to pretend to give milk, but they withheld some of it. Now, it would be the same way with worldly-minded people under the law. And so what God would do, and this is where I want to turn, if you will, to Deuteronomy. And I want to point out that in Deuteronomy chapter 26, when this third-year tithe was given, that the people of God would actually have to stand before the Lord and take an oath to God that they had not withheld any of this tithe. Listen to what he says here, and look how serious this is. In Deuteronomy 26, beginning in verse 12, when you have finished paying all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, then you shall give it to the Levite, to the stranger, to the orphan, and to the widow, that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. And you will say before the Lord your God, I have removed the sacred portion from my house, And I also have given it to the Levite and the alien and the orphan and the widow according to all your commandments which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed or forgotten any of your commandments. I have not eaten of it while mourning, nor have I removed any of it while I was unclean, nor offered any of it to the dead. I have listened to the voice of the Lord my God and have done according to all that you have commanded me. The people of God would have to make this oath that I have given this tithe, that I have not kept any of it for myself or abused it in any way. It was a serious matter to God that the people give this tithe. It was a serious matter that they give a tithe in any occasion. In fact, when the children of Israel did not give their tithe under the law, God viewed it as robbery. Look, if you will, to the last Old Testament book. And consider that even after the children of Israel had gone off into captivity and had been punished by God, that when they came back, they still had this worldly-minded view that somehow God was not going to take care of them. And so we see in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 8, the people holding back. And Malachi asked the question, will a man rob God? Will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you. And so God here accuses them of not bringing the tithe. And because of this, they were under a curse. Like I said, giving a tenth of all that you had was an act of faith. A tenth is a lot for you children out there. It's like your daddy giving you a dollar and saying, but I'm going to keep a dime. Or you give $100 and you take back 10. Or you give 1,000 and you take back 100. I mean, that's what a tenth is. And it can be a lot of money when you think about it. And if you're worldly-minded, it really is a lot of money, a tenth. And so the devil would work on the hearts of people and make them think, if you give that money, how are you going to eat? How can you take care of your family if you give a tenth? And the devil would work on the people like this. And again, in the days of Malachi, the people were thinking this way, will you rob God? And they were thinking this way, what are we going to eat? How can we live if we give this money? And so Malachi tells the people this, and we're going to continue reading where we left off. In Malachi chapter 3, I'll read verse 10, where he says here, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, so that there may be food in my house, and test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you blessings until it overflows. And then I will rebuke the devourer for you, and that would be the grasshopper, the vermin that would eat the crops. I will rebuke the devourer for you so that it will not destroy the fruits of the ground, nor will your vine and your fields cast its grapes, declares the Lord of hosts. All nations will call you blessed, for you shall be a delightful land, says the Lord of hosts. And so under the law, the people were told to give, and they were told to give. And they said, but if we give, we're going to not have any left for us. And God said, test me and see if you won't. Test me and see if you won't have plenty. So this is what the law said about tithing. And this was the encouragement that the people of God were given to tithe. But you know what? A lot of people stop right there and they say, well, that was all they were told to give. Or that, they think that's all they were told to give. But let me tell you something. That was only the beginning. If you think giving a tenth was a lot, consider some other things. There was instructions with regard to the harvest that benefited the poor. If you read Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 through 10, if you had a field, God said, don't reap to the corners. In other words, you were to kind of go in a circle around there and leave some of the produce there. Don't go to the very corners. Stay away from the sides. And that would be for the poor. And furthermore, he said, you can only go over the field once. You can't go back a second time to pick up what you left. Whoa, you think about that. you leave a little bit on the side and you can't go back a second time. And God said, no, that's for the poor. They would come and they would be able to get that for themselves so they could live. Great law. But how do you think a worldly-minded person would look at that? Boy, you know, I'm giving everything. I can't go back a second time to get what's mine. And again, what God was telling them to do is trust me to see if I won't give you plenty of food, to see if I won't take care of you. But there was more.
Every seventh year, they were not to sow at all. They were to leave their fields barren and only allow to grow in it what had been left there the year before. Pat and I used to do a little bit of gardening in Ireland, and every now and then we'd leave some potatoes in the ground. And if we just left them there, and next year we didn't do anything, all of a sudden we'd have potatoes growing, and sometimes we'd have corn growing. In other words, when you leave things in the ground, it will grow by itself the next year. And what God said is you can't sow the seventh year. You can't do anything in the field, and you're going to let everything grow, and you're to allow your, and then you're to eat from it, and let everybody else eat from it as well. So every seventh year, you couldn't do anything with your property. You couldn't grow anything. It's just to be left there. No sowing or reaping of the land, and that which grows will be given to the poor. And I do believe there were verses that said they could eat from it as well, but primarily for the poor. And think about this last one here. Every seventh year, all debts owed by their fellow Israelites were to be forgiven. So you owe me $1,000, and we make agreement to pay it off. And the seventh year comes along, you hadn't paid it off. Guess what? God said it's forgiven. Now, God tells the children of Israel, what if it's in the sixth year? And your brother's needy, and he needs some help from you. What are you to do? He said, don't hold your heart or harden your heart toward that man. He said, give him freely. But the next year it's forgiven. Give him anyway. Do not harden your heart. And listen to what God says in Deuteronomy chapter 17 about this. In Deuteronomy chapter 17, God tells the children of Israel these things regarding that particular command. Because I could see the tendency of people saying, I'm not going to get this back. Too close to the seventh year remission. And so God says in verse 9, beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying the seventh year is near. This is Deuteronomy 15:9. That there be no base thought in your heart, saying the seventh year, the year of remission is near, and your eyes hostile towards your poor brother, and you give him nothing, then he may cry out to the Lord against you, and it will be sin in you. You shall give generously to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give it to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, your needy brother in your land. And then we've already seen the promise that I will bless you. And the governor, God said, I will take care of you. It will not be a loss for you. So a tithe was nothing. They were to give much more than this under the law. And in giving like they were told to give, it was surely a test of their trust in God. Now go back to the proverb that we started off reading. He said, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so that your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats overflow with new wine. The father is telling the son to give your tithe. Honor the Lord from your wealth. The father is telling the son to give like God has told you to give. Honor him from your wealth. And don't worry about all these other things that the worldly people worry about. You will be provided for. This is not a get-rich religion. God was saying, I will give you what you need to live. That's all he was promised. You will have plenty if you do what I say to do. Some people say the idea is that they give $10 and they'll get $100. He's not talking about that, and that's foolishness. That's carnal. But God is saying, you give like I command you to give, and you will be blessed. You won't miss it. I'll take care of it. He says it as well in Proverbs chapter 11, verses 24 and 25. The same kind of lesson being taught here, where he commands them to give. And he says here in verse 24, he says, there is one who scatters and yet it increases all the more, and there is one who withholds what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous, and though he who waters will himself be watered. And so here again is the promise of God. You give and you'll prosper. Don't worry about this. And then finally, look at the Proverbs 19:17, where God specifically says through the wise man these words, the one who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord. Lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed. The Lord is good on his debts. And all God is saying here is that you just do what I tell you to do here, and I will take care of you. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, says the wise man to the son. Honor the Lord from your wealth is a manifestation of that trust. And under the law, they have to give a tithe of all their produce and even more. We didn't even talk about the fact that they weren't allowed to charge interest to their poor brother when they gave him a loan. They could charge the foreigner's interest, but not your brother's. And there are other things as well. But the point is that there were many ways that God wanted them to honor him from wealth. Now, when we come to the New Testament, somebody said, well, tithing's not in the New Testament. And I agree. It's not mentioned in the New Testament. But let me suggest you something. What is mentioned in the New Testament is that the things written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. There is a reason why these things are recorded. No man has a right to come to you and say, you must give a tenth. Nobody has that right. I don't have that right. But lest we think that we are less obligated to give because we don't have a percent put on or don't have such a codified law like this, let me again remind you that the things that are written before time are written for our learning. There is a reason why they are there, and they are meant to teach us something. And perhaps tonight I can kind of finish the thoughts in a short lesson with regard to giving in the New Testament. Because there are some principles there that are taught. No percentage is given, but there surely is a principle that is taught, and we'll go over some of these tonight in a short lesson. I don't have time to put it in now. But I hope that you've been able to see something in this lesson this morning. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. Somebody said, well, if I give all this, how am I going to live? If I help my poor brother, what's going to be left for me? If I give to the Lord like this, what's going to be left for me? I mean, all of a sudden, I'm giving everything to the Lord, it seems, at least in the worldly way of thinking. And that's what God was trying to get across here. Give. And just see if heaven will open up. And I want to stress that I'm not talking about a prosperity thing where we become wealthy because we've given. The thought is that we will be taken care of ourselves. He who waters will be watered. And God is the one who does the watering. And he does it in many ways. Honor the Lord from your wealth, said the wise man, and from the first of all your produce. And this is a manifestation of trust. And I hope that you have taken this to heart. I don't believe I've ever talked about giving in this congregation. I've been here for 8 years, I guess. This is my first lesson on giving. It's not because I never had anything to say about it. It's because giving, when we talk about giving, there's always some question about motivation. Why is he doing this? No. But there is no sinister motive here. But I do think as we give every first day of the week, as the Lord has commanded, that we need to really check our hearts out. Are we giving in a way that is acceptable to God? The verse of Malachi still holds true. Will a man rob God? And that's between you and God, not me and you, not Randy and Bill and you, or the elders and you. It's between you and God. And God knows. And God takes into account the things that he knows about you and you know about yourself. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. Trust in him. And that's how you do it, at least in this giving matter. As we close today, let me again stress that God is a good God, and God is the giver of all good things. And the greatest gift that God has given to us is the gift of his Son, Jesus Christ. And in the New Testament, this is the great motivation for giving. That God gave his Son, and that he who was rich became poor for our sakes, that we could become rich. And I want us to think about that as we sing this last song, that look what God has done for me. Have you taken advantage of the grace of God? Have you believed in Jesus as being the Son of God? Have you turned from your sins? Have you, as a penitent believer, been baptized, immersed for the forgiveness of sins? If not, then you are turning away the grace of God, and you are left with nothing. And so we beseech you today, be reconciled to God. Come to him. Accept his gift and see how enriched you will be from him. Please respond. We stand to sing the song of encouragement.